This hearing of the Senate Community Regional Affairs Committee will now come to order. It is now 1:32 p.m. on Tuesday, April 30th in Belts 105. Members present are Senator Gray Jackson, Senator Bjorkman, and myself, Senator Dunbar. Let the record reflect we have a quorum to conduct business. Please take this time to silence your cell phones. Before we begin, I'd like to thank Juliana Singh, the Senate Community Regional Affairs Recording Secretary, and Joseph Giesbrecht from the Juno LIO for staffing the committee today. We have two items of business on our agenda. First, House Bill 347, Property Assessment by Representative Kalum. And second, Senate Bill 264, Loans Under $25,000, Payday Loans, sponsored by this committee. We will hear an introductory hearing as well as invited in public testimony on both bills. I'll say to my colleagues, if you're considering amendments, please let me know, please let my office know as soon as possible, as we are going to start moving things out under bills previously heard. There's only about a 2 weeks left in the session. First up, HB 347. We heard the companion bill to HB 347, Senator Keel's Senate Bill 242, on March 12th, 2024, when we held invited and public testimony. We have Representative Kalum and her staff presenting today. Representative, will you please come forward and put yourself on the record and introduce the bill?
So good afternoon, Chair Dunbar, members of the Senate Committee and Regional Affairs Committee. So for the record, my name is Julie Kalum, representative for House District 11, South Anchorage Hillside. Thank you for hearing HB 347 this afternoon. As you know, this is the companion legislation, as previously stated, Senate Bill 242. With the chair's permission, I'll give a brief recap of what the bill does and then turn it over to my staff to go through the changes between the two pieces of legislation. So HB 347 provides a path of fairness when it comes to property taxes by putting sideboards in place for municipalities while still preserving local control. It directs the department to set standards for Alaskans to be clear on what the rules are for assessing property values while allowing municipalities to adopt their own standards to meet specific needs. HB 347 changes the default for those who hear tax appeals to an appointed board of equalization instead of local governing body. It is important to keep those two separate as we listen to public testimony that there are many Alaskans who can't speak freely with their elected official who may later sit as a quasi-judge over their appeal. HB 347 prohibits a municipality from increasing the assessed property value during an appeal, stopping any immediate punitive action, which has unfortunately occurred in some areas of our state. Finally, this legislation ensures assessors have the necessary professional experience and credentials to do the job well for both the taxpayer and the municipalities. So that concludes my remarks, and I'm happy to turn it over to Ms. Borlich for the summary of changes.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative. Are there any questions for Representative before we go to Ms. Borlich? I'll say also we have online Dan Nelson, the state assessor in the Community and Regional Affairs Division. He's available for questions. Ms. Borlich, you please put yourself on the record and present the differences between the two bills.
Thank you, Chair Dunbar. For the record, Edra Borlich, staff to Representative Kalum. We made a few changes in the other body during the committee process. Everybody should have a summary of changes for version CS for HB 347 CNRA amended. And the first change
briefities.
Briefities. back on the record. Ms. Morledge, could you please continue with your presentation?
Yes, thank you, Chair. Edra Morledge, again, for the record. The first change was that we defined in the bill the full and true value of a property as the estimated price that the property would bring in an open market and under the prevailing market conditions in a sale between a willing seller and a willing buyer, both conversant with the property and with prevailing general price levels.
Can I pause you there? Where can you, when you're saying, she says where exactly in the bill you're at?
Sorry, Mr.
Chair.
Very
front. To Chair Dunbar, line 10 through 12.
Okay. So those, that addition there is a new section, a new portion
well,
of the section.
If I may, Chair Dunbar, that was actually taken out at the drafting of the bill accidentally, and so they just it was put back in.
Okay.
That was more of a mistake.
And was it in the Senate version then, or it was okay?
Yep.
Okay.
Thank you again for the record, Edra Morledge. The next change is on page 2. It's in section 3, lines 15 and 16. We added that a level 3 certification or higher for the assessor, for a municipal assessor, rather than just requiring only the level 3.
Okay.
Can I add to that, Chair?
Yes, go ahead.
So that was another member of the body had pointed out there is, you can go up to level 5 as an assessor. So we didn't want to just restrict it. It's 3 or higher. That's why we added that.
Very good. Go on, please.
For the record, Edra Morledge again. The next change is on the same page, beginning on line 18. This section requires the assessor to meet with a person who has received an assessment notice that they believe to be an error or that they choose to dispute to advise them of the methods used and to answer questions of the property owner.
You know, I'm wondering if our numbering is a little different because that's not line 18 in the version I have. Are you looking at, are we together looking at 347S.A?
I have Julie Cologne for the record to the chair. Looks like I have S.A and I'm looking to see. You're correct, it's not on 18.
Chair Dunbar, for the record, Edra Morledge again. My apologies. I'm working off a draft that shows the differences between the two bills, and they are different lines, so I will clarify that. It is on page 2. It's section 4, beginning on line 10, the change I just described.
If requested by the person, the assessor shall meet with the person and answer questions, okay? Very good.
And the last change is the effective date, and we changed the effective date of by when a municipality shall have a level 3 certificated assessor or higher to January 1st of 2026 rather than 2025.
Very good. Are there any questions for Ms. Morledge? I have one for the representative. I was wondering if there have been discussion about this. Section 4, that requirement, I could see how it could cause sort of two separate challenges. I believe that there are some very small communities in Alaska that where the assessors are done on a contract basis as opposed to full-time and sometimes don't even live in the community. And so is it envisioned that a meeting could be done remotely or does it have to be an in-person meeting?
Yeah, so for the record, Julie Colomb to the chair. Yes, that... So that a lot, we heard that in public testimony that there were many taxpayers that were trying to meet with the assessor about the assessment and they weren't getting a meeting. So that was the intention of the sentence. I think it can be a Zoom meeting. It could be a phone call. It's stated pretty general. I would say in public testimony, there were people that wanted the assessor to come to their property and walk through the property with them. And so I didn't dictate that they had to do that. I just wanted to have the assessor be available to answer questions before they went through the whole BOE BOE process. And I would say in the larger cities, you know, especially in Anchorage, the assessor's very available to do that, but that is not happening around the state. So that's why it's especially smaller communities.
Well, that brings me to my second concern, which mm-hmm. is Anchorage in particular, mm-hmm. and probably Fairbanks and Juneau as well, but in Anchorage in particular, you know, there are many, many thousands of properties, and it's not too hard to imagine a group of folks sort of abusing this system by, you know, get a few hundred people, all of them request a meeting. The assessor themselves, the assessor has a small staff, but the assessor themselves having to go even on a Zoom meeting to each one of them individually, I think you could very quickly see a sort of filibuster of the assessor's office. Mm-hmm. Was that discussed at all, you know, when this was being drafted?
So Julie Colomb to the chair. It wasn't really discussed, but I think why that didn't come up, maybe it's because my experience is in Anchorage. When I talk to the assessor there, and anytime he does presentations, 90% of the problems get resolved in conversations with the assessment office. So I think it's a general practice, especially for the big offices anyway, to try to work it out before the BOE process happens. And so I guess that's probably why it didn't come up. I didn't see that as a flood. I thought it would just kind of reinforce what they're already doing now. And like I said, the complaints about not getting a meeting came from smaller communities, not the bigger ones.
Thank you. Are there any other questions? Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So at the municipality of Anchorage, assessments are typically 10% or more lower than market value. That's the way it is, and it still is. So does this amendment mean that the assessments will now have to be assessed at the market value?
The first
amendment.
Yeah, so through the chair to Senator Gray Jackson. So are you talking about the line 10, the full and true value as provided in standards? That's already language that's already there. As we've seen a lot throughout the state, a lot of assessors are going to the market, like what's happening now with inflation. What I have found when I've talked to assessors in lots of different places, that they should actually be lagging a little bit behind. It's really, this isn't going to change that. It's still full and true value. That was in there before. I didn't change that. Like I said, it was inadvertently taken out in the original bill, and we just put it back in.
Yeah. If I can follow up, Mr.
Yes, Senator Gray Jackson.
Thanks. So this was already in state statute.
Yeah.
Okay, and the reason why I asked the question is because when we look at the summary of the changes, it says the estimated price of the property would bring in an open market and under prevailing market conditions. Mm-hmm. So it goes a little bit further mm-hmm. than what the language is in state statutes, and that's why I asked the question.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Gray Jackson. Actually, I'd like to direct that to Mr. Nelson. Mr. Nelson, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. This is Dan Nelson, through the chair, Dan Nelson, state assessor.
Thank you, Mr. Nelson. So to follow up on Senator Gray Jackson's question, there is additional language here in section one, stating that the assessor shall determine the full and true value as provided in standards adopted by the department. Do you see this as a change in policy, or is this restating a policy that is already the case for state and local taxes?
I see it as the same policy. Excuse me, Dan, through the chair, Dan Nelson, state assessor. I see it as the same same policy, as you had said.
Very good. I guess my question, another question for you, Mr. Nelson, also to the maker of the motion, or the bill. So there is no fiscal note here, but you know, we assume that if we're requiring municipalities to get level 3 certification for assessors, you know, about how much will it cost for them? Is there any estimate of how much it will cost local communities to get that training for their assessors?
Through the chair, or to the chair, Dan Nelson, state assessor. I'm not exactly sure on the cost. I just know of the requirements for the level three. And the level three requirements include there are points given for various education and experience. And the level, there's five levels. Level one requires 90 points, and IAAO course 151, IAAO course 101, and 2 years of appraisal experience. Level three is 160 points, and must meet the level one requirements. And they must also take the income approach to value IAAO course 102 or appraisal of land course 201 and 3 years of experience. To get to the level three, you would require 220 points, must meet the requirements of level two, and then also have the IAAO course 300. Which is fundamentals of mass appraisal, or IAAO course 310, applications of mass appraisal fundamentals, and would require 6 years of appraisal experience minimum.
Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for being here. I think your name is Mr. Nelson, right? Okay, good. So anyway, my question is, do you happen to know how many assessors currently hold a level three certification? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Through the chair, Dan Nelson, state assessor. I do not know the qualifications of the assessors, of each assessor, and I do not know the number that would have the level three. Currently, I do have the level three.
Thank you.
I do not know of other what the other assessors' levels are, but we could find out.
If I can follow up, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you so much for saying that you can find out, because I was going to ask you. So I really appreciate that. Thank you.
And I guess Representative Colomb, was there a discussion about, do you have a sense of, do most assessors have this qualification? Is this a new qualification for most of them?
Yeah, so for the record, Julie Colomb to Chair Dunbar. So this was a big discussion with my colleagues from small communities. This was well vetted. One of the things I wanted to point out is that the bill does allow smaller communities to be supervised by a level three assessor. So let's say they have a level one or two. They don't have to get their level three. As long as there's a level three that has eyes on what's happening, That was a provision that came from me talking to smaller from legislators from smaller communities. It also right now there is a recidivism with assessors. So if they come from the lower 48, they have similar qualifications, they can get Alaska levers the level three from the qualifications that are required here. There's also a lot of communities were concerned about having to hire a level three assessor. Many of the smaller communities use contractors anyway. It would just kind of require them to make sure that contractor has a level three certification or higher. That a lot of this problem came from uncertified assessors. So those stories from Haynes and Juneau, those were uncertified. They did not have the credentials to do what they were doing, and it created a lot of problems. So there's a lot of provisions for the smaller communities to make sure that they're meeting that requirement.
Thank you.
Very good. Is there any other questions? All right, this time we'll open. We don't have any invited testimony, so I'm going to open public testimony. Is there anyone in the room who would like to testify to this bill? Not seeing anyone. Is there anyone online? I'm not seeing anyone. Okay. This time we will close testimony on this bill. Are there any further questions before we set this bill aside? Okay, I'm not seeing it. Well, thank you very much, Rep. Colomb, for bringing this bill to us, and we will certainly hear it again soon.
Thank you.
Thank you. So we'll take a brief eddy as we set up for the next bill. Back on the record, we are now going to take up Senate Bill 264. This is the companion to House Bill 145. It is sponsored by this committee. I will invite Ariel Wiggin, the committee aide, to approach and introduce this bill.
Hello. For the record, my name is Ariel Wiggin, committee aide to Senate Community and Regional Affairs. The brunt of the impact of these payday loans and the technicalities I will leave to our knowledgeable invited testimony. But in summary, each year approximately 15,000 Alaskans take out payday loans, but we know the effect of these loans are far larger. The thrust of this bill is removing a special exception and holding all lenders to the same standards when issuing loan contracts. General lending laws cap institutions at a maximum rate of 36% annual percentage rate, APR, but there's a payday loan exception, and so those who are finding themselves in a vulnerable position, trapped in a cycle of financial hardship, are drawn into taking out a loan from a lender that falls outside of these exceptions. I will leave the rest of the details to our invited testimony, but I'll move on to our sectional, if that pleases the committee.
Yes, please move on to the sectional.
So this is a 16-section bill, so I'll get through this as quickly as possible. Section 1 simplifies bill wording for clarity, replacing several phrases with word on. Section 2 modifies AS 0601-0503 to eliminate mentions of the Deferred Deposit Advances Act in definitions. Section 3 broadens the definition of lenders in 620-010 for loans up to $25,000, ensuring it includes various financial arrangements and practices. It states that a loan occurs in Alaska if it's completed in Alaska by a resident of Alaska. this is an issue because several of these organizations are out of state, as you'll hear from other testifiers. Section 4 improves amends AS 06-20025. It integrates Alaska's licensing system with a nationwide multi-state licensing system and registry. This simplifies many administrative processes. Section 5 allows the collection of application investigation fees through the new system. This amends AS 06-20030A. Section 6 amends the same section, subsection B, to collect licensing fees through the new system, adjust licensing structures without increasing costs for licensees. Section 7 repeals and reenacts AS 06-20090, updating these requirements for small loan business licenses to match current regulatory standards. This was partially a cleanup made in the other body. Section 8 eliminates 06-20170, changing the mandatory inspection period for small loan businesses from fixed 18-month intervals to as needed for regulatory compliance. Section 9 revises AS 06-20230 to standardize the interest rate at 3% per month for loans up to $25,000, whether they're closed or open-ended, to make this loan rate simplified and consistent. Section 10 adds AS 06-20310, introduces rules against interest rate evasion on small loans. Section 11 introduces AS 06-20325, and it prevents small loan businesses from threatening criminal action against borrowers who are in default. Section 12 amends AS 06-20900 to specify and define registry as the previously mentioned nationwide multi-state licensing systems and registry. Section 13 adjust AS 0876500 to no longer exempt deferred deposit advance licensees from certain regulations, applying consistent standards across all these similar institutions. Section 14 amends AS 4545020 to ensure that all service charges are included in the interest rate calculations. Section 15 removes multiple sections within the section of law just to clean up financial regulations. The effective date is our final section, and this bill will take effect on July 1st of this year. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Wiggin. Is there any questions? Are there any questions, rather? Okay. We have online Rob Schmidt, the Director of the Division of Bankings and Securities. He's available for questions, as is Ryan Dukowitz, the Financial Examiner for Division of Banking and Securities. We will move now to invited testimony. We have one individual for invited testimony on the line, Ms. Jen Griffiths, the Vice President of Policy and Advocacy at the Alaska Children's Trust. We also have Graham Downey in the room. She's here in person. Wonderful. Mr. Downey, are you available for questions, or are you going to give a separate testimony? Okay. So we'll hear testimony from both Ms. Griffiths and Mr. Downey. Ms. Griffiths, please put yourself on the record and provide your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Dunbar and members of the Senate Community and Regional Affairs Committee. For the record, Jen Griffiths, Vice President of Policy and Advocacy for the Alaska Children's Trust. The Alaska Children's Trust offers its strong support for Senate Bill 264, which seeks to establish reasonable consumer protections for payday lending practices in Alaska. As the statewide lead organization focused on the prevention of child abuse and neglect, Alaska Children's Trust fully supports enacting legislation to prevent the long-term negative impacts on Alaskan families that can result from high-interest, small-dollar loans. The detrimental impact of economic hardships and poverty on family well-being is widely acknowledged, serving as a major risk factor for child abuse and neglect. Financial strain can have far-reaching effects on family dynamics, amplifying stress, anxiety, and frustration within households. Parents may find it increasingly difficult to provide for their children's basic needs, such as food, a safe place to live, clothing, and medical care. The scarcity of resources and the constant pressure of becoming financially solvent can lead to increased parental stress, increasing the risk of child abuse and neglect. To alleviate short-term economic hardships, Alaskan families often rely on payday loans. However, financial strain resulting from payday loans can both cause and further exacerbate these challenges. The appeal of payday loans lies in their easy accessibility and quick cash disbursement. However, these types of loans are not ways of credit building and instead trap many Alaskans in a cycle of debt and poverty. In 2020, neglect and medical neglect made up 75% of all substantiated child maltreatment cases in Alaska, illustrating how distinctly tied economic hardship is to Alaska's incredibly high rates of child abuse and neglect. Senate Bill 264 addresses the need to standardize rational safeguards for low-income families who face financial instability by ensuring that payday loans are subject to reasonable maximum interest rates in line with other small-dollar loans. As Alaska continues to grapple with one of the highest rates of child abuse and neglect in the country, we should be looking for every possible solution to help strengthen our children and families. Implementing consistent consumer protections for moments when families are in the greatest need prioritizes economic stability and the well-being of Alaska's children. Thank you for your consideration and support of Senate Bill 264.
Thank you, Ms. Griffiths. Do we have any questions for Ms. Griffiths? Okay, thank you very much. We'll move on now to Mr. Graham Downey from, remind me what ACPIRG stands for, the Alaska Public Interest Research Group. There it is. So please put yourself on the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Dunbar. Yes, my name is Graham Downey. I'm the Economic Justice Lead with the Alaska Public Interest Research Group. I thought I'd just quickly lay out, I think there are three core aspects of this bill, and then happy to answer your questions about what the bill does and why it does it the way it does it. The way I see it, there are three fundamental pieces to the act. The first piece is that it cleans up the Small Loans Act, which is Alaska Statute 620, and a lot of those changes were requested by the Division of Banking and Securities, who have been very supportive of the bill. I think it's been some time since that act was updated, so these are nice cleanups of the act. The second piece, which is related, is flattening the rate cap to 36%. Currently, Alaska has, I would say, five tiers of interest rate limits. We have a default usury rate, which is in Alaska Statute 4545. We have the Small Loans Act, which has three tiers within it, including a tier of unlimited interest rate between $25,000 and $10,000, 24% below $10,000, and then 36% below $850. And then the Deferred Deposit Advances Act, which is the Payday Lending Act, and that's what allows the 15% every 2 weeks plus a $5 origination fee, which averages to 421% interest rate on the small dollar loans. So the act flattens all of that, not including the default usury rate. So we'll still have the default usury rate for all loans over $25,000, but for loans below $25,000, we'll have the 36% interest rate limit, which is good for business, it's good for consumers, it's a nice simplification of the law. In addition, the Small Loans Act establishes an anti-evasion provision, which is modeled on similar statutes from New Mexico and Maine. What that makes sure is that online out-of-state lenders are abiding by Alaska law. I think it's a well-written anti-evasion statute. It respects federal preemption, and it creates a safe harbor for online lenders below 36%. So if you're an out-of-state lender and you happen to lend to an Alaskan, you're not suddenly going to need to follow the Small Loans Act as long as you're below 36%. And we've seen broad support from industry for that safe harbor and the 36% cap. Local credit unions, as well as online lenders, the American FinTech Council, we work closely with to craft that language to make sure they can still do business in Alaska and offer alternatives to payday loan products.
Wonderful. Are there any questions for Mr. Graham? I'm sorry, Mr. Downey. I have a couple. So first, where did the 36% number come from? Why 36% is the cap? And so here, there is the number 3% we heard in the sectional. Is that the connection 3% per month? And so 36%, that's how you're sort of conceiving of it?
Yes. Yeah, Graham Downey for the record. Yes, that's correct. 3% per month. 36% aligns with the Military Lending Act, which protects active duty military, but does not cover veterans or other citizens. And 36% has also been the number that's been emerging nationally. So I think about 20 states now have passed a 36% rate cap.
And that was going to be my second question. So I thought that there were already protections for active duty military members. As an officer who sometimes interacts with junior enlisted, I'm familiar with some of the attempts to prey upon young service members as they travel state to state. And so we have these sort of protections for them. Do you have any knowledge of how these laws have been used to protect service members? And also, so I get the 36% came from that act. Do you know where they got that number? I mean, is there any sense of why that number is the one that's the right policy?
Yeah, I think, sorry, Graham Downey for the record. My understanding is 36% has emerged as a compromise between sort of consumer groups like ACPIRG as well as mainstream banking and financial institutions. Is 36% is pretty much the upper limit of what reasonable credit is. Above that, we're thinking like, hey, this is not access to credit. This is extracting wealth from the borrowers. So it is a compromise, I would say, between industry and consumer representatives. We see broad public support for the 36% number. And in fact, the majority of a strong majority, bipartisan majority, supports 36%. And a majority of those who are opposed is because it's too high. So that 36% is like a nice upper limit. I think, you know, in an ideal world, it might be lower, but 36 is a compromise.
Any other questions for Mr. Downey? We have someone online here. It says unavailable, though. Is Mr. Brenner still online? I'm not sure if he's for public or invited testimony. We also have thank you, Mr. Downey. I appreciate your testimony. We have Don Hanash, from the Division Operations Manager, Division of Bankings and Security, who is also going to testify. You want to come forward and put yourself on the record?
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Don Hanash, Division Operations Manager for the Division of Banking and Securities. And I am here to present the fiscal note if you would like and answer any questions according to what we have already on. I believe we've already provided a fiscal note for your records.
Please proceed.
All right. Thank you. So as you were saying, Senate Bill 264 is a companion bill to House Bill 145. The fiscal note is quite simple because we have 19 DDA licenses in the state of Alaska. Those licenses would, if this legislation goes through, those licenses would be deleted. Those licensees would have the opportunity, of course, to apply for a license under the Small Loan Act. So for the division, we really do not see any large changes in our revenue from this change. What we believe we would see is around $28,000 a fiscal year in loss for those 19 licenses. We do receive a $3,000 biannual renewal fee. So that is really the only downside that we see, is it's just a small amount. So $28,000 is what we would see.
Very good. Are there any questions for, I'm sorry, did you say your last name again?
Hanish.
Are there any other questions for Ms. Hanish? Okay. Well, thank you very much. We appreciate the division being here. This time we're going to open it up to public testimony. Is there anyone in the room who would like to testify on this bill? Not seeing anyone. Is there anyone online? And again, we have Mr. Patrick Brenner. Are they? Okay. Doesn't seem like you are. Mr. Brenner, if you can hear us, call back in. But it says unavailable here. And I'm not seeing anyone else for public testimony. Okay. And we will close public testimony. I'll say for the public, if anyone has any written comments, please share them via email to committee members or to scra@akledge.gov. With that, we will set this bill aside and close out the hearing. The Senate Community Regional Affairs Committee will meet next on Thursday, May 2nd, 2024 at 1:30 p.m. The time is 2:12, and this hearing of SCRA is adjourned.